Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and on this day when we are 9 weeks out from Election Day, we're going to get a read of the political landscape from the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Good morning, Carrie.
Good to talk to you. You're on the phone today, so...
Yeah, there's something wrong with the connection, but that doesn't mean I can be silenced, okay?
You could never be silenced.
That's
Jeez,
that's
we know
true.
That. Okay, question for Ken. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Tweet that question to Ken. Or to me, for Ken. It's at Carrie NPR. So Ken, characterize what the next 9 weeks are going to be like.
Well, if yesterday is any indication, obviously there's only going to be a certain amount of states in this country that the candidates will be worth visiting. I mean, all four candidates, the two presidential, two vice presidential, were in Ohio yesterday, and Ohio polls are showing it pretty close. And, of course, with the Electoral College system and not the popular vote, there are just the swing states that these candidates will be visiting, the Iowas, the Colorados, the North Carolinas, Florida's, Pennsylvania's, things like that. The rest of the country could just sit, you know, open up a thing of popcorn and just watch the, watch the campaign going on. But it's going to be some preparations for the debates. The debates it looks like they're going to be enormously significant, especially with the fact that the national polls and even some of the state battleground polls itself have closed, have tightened in the past couple of weeks.
I want to talk to you about the debates here in a minute, but I just want to say that we talk about swing states quite often. Tell me what your working definition of that is. Maybe it's a good time to do that as we head into
If you go back on a number of cycles, I mean, of course, Barack Obama has changed the landscape in 2008, 2012. A lot of solidly Republican states, such as North Carolina and Colorado and states like that, that have been voting Republican for many years, are suddenly either dead even or swing states, or have the possibility of Democrats picking them up. So because Florida was so close in 2000, Ohio was so close in 2004, I mean, these in a close election, these states can be crucial, will be crucial. And so maybe there's a half a dozen of them, maybe eight or nine of them. In 2012, for example, Barack Obama won every key battleground state except for North Carolina. So that's where the election is going to be won or lost in those states.
You know, we just had Janelle Ross from The Fix, The Washington Post, The Fix on the show. And we were talking about, believe it or not, Texas, because she's from Texas. And The Washington Post just tweeted out this poll that shows Trump and Clinton very even in Texas. And I said to Janelle, well, you know, this election aside, isn't it really going to take like two or three more election cycles to really see demographic change in voting patterns in Texas? And she said, I wouldn't say it's going to take that long. What's your take on that, Ken?
I kind of agree more with you on this. I think it will take some time. The Republicans are still winning every state election. No Democrat has been elected to the Senate from Texas since Lloyd Benson in 1988 in his reelection battle. All the statewide officials are Republican. Obviously, we know that demographic changes are happening in Texas and Georgia and Arizona and a lot of states, but in Texas as well, as Latino voting strength has increased, or at least population has increased, the voting strength is still questionable. And I'm with you on this. I still think it'll take a couple of more cycles. Let's see what happens after the 2020 census, when Texas may get more additional congressional districts, or if nothing else, the districts may be redrawn. But Latinos voting strength is coming to Texas. I just don't think in time for the Democrats in 2016.
Yeah. One more note here before we talk debates. Early voting starts in some of these states even before the candidates have that first debate, doesn't it?
Yes, and you know something, that's my problem with early voting. I think it's great that, you know, we have voters have opportunities to vote not just only on Election Day this year, November 8th, but because of work or travel complications or vacations or things like that, you have a bigger opportunity, a bigger window to vote. But the fact is, You have some states that are, as you say, what's the point of having these debates and watching everything that's going on between the candidates if you can make your vote, you know, if you could cast your vote before the September 26th opening of these debates? And
well, I kind of think that, but you know,
why
Ken,
not just wait and just wait it all and see at the end?
Except that I mean, the debates will be significant, but how many minds are they going to change? I mean, you know how polarized things are.
Yes, that's a very, very important point. I think once upon a time, you know, the key was to try to get independents and moderates and centrists and swing voters to switch over to your side. Now it's really all about getting your base and core voters and supporters out to vote. I don't think there's many, especially when you have two candidates as strong as Donald Trump, personalities, I mean, as strong as Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I don't think there's that many undecideds out there. That's an important point.
A call for you here, Ken, from Lynn in Moorhead. Hi, Lynn. What do you want to know from Ken?
Thank you for taking my call. Sure. It's an honor to talk to Ken.
thank you so much.
I have been so frustrated listening to voters, like in the previous show, who say, oh, I think Trump will be able to turn the deficit around, and I just believe he will work for the country. How do they get that? He has never made any such promises. He hasn't demonstrated anything. Do you think in the debate there is any chance that Trump will actually answer questions and give any policy statements or anything that will help convince some of these voters that they are misguided? Or at least,
that's a great question, and it's an honor to answer your question. But I think if you take a look at the way the two candidates are preparing for these debates, Hillary Clinton, by all accounts, are talking to foreign policy and domestic policy experts, is going through position papers and position research. And Donald Trump, by many accounts, is meeting with Rudy Giuliani, Roger Ailes, and looking for, like, gotcha sound bites. So, I mean, I'm sure his debate prep would be more than that, but for the most part, he seems to be taking the debates as seriously as he's taken the campaign, which is just saying things in many cases where the facts may not line up with reality, but he's very content to give off these sound bites. So I don't know, I don't know what he's going to say during the debates, but just like that car wreck that's up ahead on the road, I know that we're not going to take our eyes off it.
You know, Ken, your newsmaker mystery sound of the week was going to be Trump on his plane talking about the debates and saying that he is not doing a lot of prep. Of course, we've already talked about this, but he's not doing a lot of prep because he's seen candidates who have done a lot of prep and they get up there and they can't speak. Is it dangerous not to prep well for a debate?
Well, you know something? Is it dangerous for Donald Trump? That's a great question because I mean, listening to some of the answers, I didn't come on the show to just bash Donald Trump, but I watched Donald Trump during every primary debate, and some of his answers regarding foreign policy, for example, are just wrong or frighteningly ill-informed. And I'm thinking, will this come back to bite the candidate in the end? And so far it hasn't. Now, in the Republican primary and contest, that's a different electorate. I think there's a broader bunch of voters who are looking at the general election in November. But I kind of think if you can't bluff your way through foreign policy. I think you can't say Putin's a good guy, or I never met Putin, or I did meet Putin, and expect voters to say, wait a second, is this going to be the next commander in chief? So I think he should take it seriously because I think most of the American people will be taking it seriously.
It's Matt Lauer, isn't it, Ken, that's moderating the first debate?
No. I put it on Facebook. What Matt Lauer is doing tomorrow is this town hall thing. Where Hillary gets some questions and then Donald gets some questions. But the first debate, it will be Lester Holt on the 26th and Hofstra. And then you have others. You have Chris Wallace of Fox News. You'll have Martha Raddatz of ABC, but not Matt Lauer.
Okay. I really want these moderators to pin Trump down on this immigration thing, because could anything be more confusing and need clarification, right?
Well, you know something? Look, remember last week is just a perfect example. I mean, we all expected a softening of the position on immigration. That's what Kellyanne Conway of the Trump campaign said would happen. We expect to see clarification, some softening, and a lot of Republicans said good, because maybe it'll help him win over more, you know, more Republican voters who are right now shying away from him. And so he gives this kind of presidential-sounding speech when he's in Mexico, standing next to the president. The aura, at least the picture looked very, the visuals looked great. And then he comes back to Phoenix with the most hardline speech I've ever heard him give on immigration.
It's so weird.
And then basically, so what is his position? And every time he's asked, he says, well, you know, it's coming soon. Well, it's going to have to come very soon if people want to get a good understanding of what he stands for.
Did you see Mike Pence, his running mate on Meet the Press? I mean, he was in a deeply uncomfortable position to try to shed some clarity on this immigration policy and yet dodge the key question from Chuck Todd. It was painful to watch.
Well, he dodged the position. He dodged the question because we don't know what Donald Trump's position is until Donald Trump says it the next time. I mean, we've seen several different positions on several different issues by Trump. He'll insist there's no ambiguity at all or flip-flopping at all. It's just whatever he says last is the position. So when, you know, Pence says, look, I am going to release my tax returns, or I am going to endorse Paul Ryan, even if it's breaking from Donald Trump, Mike Pence, you knew that was going to happen no matter who was the vice presidential pick for Donald Trump. He's put himself in a tough position. Mike Pence is a good guy, and he's very, very conservative, and he'll upset a lot of women on votes on things like abortion and reproductive rights and same-sex marriage and same-sex rights. But by and large, he's a straightforward kind of guy, and he's put in this very awkward position of trying to figure out what the top of the ticket is all about.
Call for you, Ken, here from Brandon in Forest Lake. Hi, Brandon. What's the question?
Hi.
I wanted Ken's opinion on whether or not a vote for a third-party candidate or even a non-vote, someone who doesn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Would you consider that a vote for Donald Trump or not?
Well, you know something, that's a great question, and that's what a lot of people are trying to weigh, whether, you know, the Democrats are still haunted by the few votes, the 1.7% of the votes in Florida that Ralph Nader got in 2000, but those 97,000 votes for Nader in Florida could very well have given the presidency to George W. Bush,
And I always have to say, and if Al Gore had won his home state of Tennessee, it wouldn't have been a deal.
More than just that. And as Ralph Nader will say, what about the hundreds of thousands of Democrats who voted for Bush in Florida?
So right.
It's not just Ralph Nader. But the point is, in a close election, but look, you know, there are some people, given the high negative numbers for both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, there are a quite sizable number, maybe not enough for 15% to get in the debates, but a sizable enough number of people say that you know, there is no lesser of two evils, and I'm going to go third party.
Tom asks here, Ken, on Twitter, my 13-year-old asks, with the swing states determining the election, why should we even care here in Minnesota? And then Tom says, what do I tell him?
You know something? That's a great question. I mean, there are arguments for the Electoral College, otherwise people will never go into states like Iowa or Colorado. But it's a very good point. I mean, I live in suburban Maryland. If you're a Republican, well, it doesn't matter how you vote in Maryland because you know how it's going to go. Minnesota has gone for every Democratic candidate starting in 1976, the longest streak of any state in the country. And, you know, Republicans don't come close to winning.
I was going to say, and this is why the candidates don't even show up here. Well, they come here with their hand out to make some money, but other than that, they don't come to campaign very often.
I know, and that's bad if you're a button collector in Minnesota.
Hey, what's your favorite button of the weekend? I need to ask you this more often.
Well, you know something, there are pretty much, I've never seen as many obscene buttons. They used to be clever.
Really?
You know, like for example, when Roosevelt was running for a third term in 1940, Wilkie put out a button that said, no third termites. You know, things seem clever, or at least it seemed clever to
That's
me.
Good.
But now it's just everybody sucks and deport Hillary and you know, it's ugly, just like the campaign is ugly. I never said that about campaign buttons, but the campaign buttons can be ugly too.
Ken, good to chat. Next Monday, can't wait. See you then.
Thanks so much.
Ken Rudin, the political junkie.